I had such an amazing talk with my next great guest, Roger Ruggi. And Roger says the following. Employee assistance, peer support, and chaplaincy programs are failing because they are not used to their full potential. These traditional programs have never successfully addressed the stigma of suspicion and career suicide that using those services can create. Roger created Hero Talk. Hero Talk offers a way for first responders to take back control of their personal and professional lives by empowering real-world solutions that you, the Hero community, can put into your daily practice. They are about helping you build a level of resiliency that goes beyond mere survival. They help you to thrive. Now, Roger is a 20-year in-the-trenches law enforcement veteran and survival of post-traumatic stress. He's done just about every job possible in law enforcement, patrol, detective, street crimes, you name it, he's done it. He is the author of The Warrior's Mantra, Barricade Books, as well as a certified stress trainer, mentor, and life coach. Grab a pen and paper, take some notes with this next amazing guest, Roger Ruggi, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in. So excited to be here and so excited for our next guest. Thank you for tuning in. I know you got a lot of different options out there, but thank you for spending some of your valuable time with me. That's why we continue to grow. In fact, if you love the content, love the shows, head over to Apple Podcasts, give us that 5-star rating and review. We sure would appreciate it. And continue to share this show and other shows with your family and friends. And lastly, follow us on Facebook at Criminal Justice Evolution. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. Clearly, unprecedented times we live in, but you're going to be fine. You are growing more resilient and stronger every day. We will come out of this. I promise you we will, and you're going to be stronger and better for it. Remember, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. So honored to be partnered with a great company like Detectachem. If you've never heard of this company, you need to familiarize yourself with them. They are providing mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of our brave people who protect us every day. Fits in the palm of their hand, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. This app-based technology is a must-have for your organization. Again, head over to cjevolution.com and see the link to Detectachem and see how they can help keep your troops safer.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything.
800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. That's 800-210-7907.
If you love coffee, and I know a lot of you do, you're in the criminal justice field, you know what I'm going to tell you. You're going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. I am a huge fan of this company, most notably their Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. I don't go a day without my Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. You're going to love their products from coffees to elixirs to cocos. They have it all. Best of all, you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Head over to cjevolution.com. See the link to Four Sigmatic. You will not be disappointed. On to this great and informative show with the one and only Roger Ruggi. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Very excited to have my next guest on the show, Roger Ruggi. He's a retired Leo, a coach, a podcast host, and a master instructor. We're going to talk all about that. Roger, thank you, brother, for being here.
It is a joy, Patrick. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, man, I've been following you on social for a long time. I just listened to your podcast, herotalk.org. We're going to talk about it. Amazing show, brother. Keep up the great work. Now, I always ask Leos who come on the show, former or past Leos, and I'm going to ask you the same thing. Why did you get into this great profession we call law enforcement?
It is such an interesting question. And if you'd have asked me back in the day, I'd have said to protect and serve like we do on the oral board, right? But the truth is, I had a pretty rough experience as a kid. And I was part of the San Francisco's Board of Supervisors busing program. And the busing program was where they took the inner city kids and the suburban kids and mixed them. So they wanted white kids to go to the black school and black kids to go to the white school and integrate the races, which on paper sounds like a really cool idea, right? To get everybody together. Mm-hmm. The problem was I ended up in this school in the inner city of San Francisco where I was abused horribly through bullying, right? So as I grew up and I came into my strength, I think a lot of first responders and military folks kind of share this sentiment. It's like, you know what? I'm going to do my part to make sure that I can protect as many people as possible from the things that I went through as a kid. And so truthfully, I did it because I wanted to become a protector and to serve.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. And that, I mean, how did that play into, I mean, horrible bullying and, you know, you had to go through all that crap. So how did that play into your career in law enforcement? Did it affect you negatively, Roger, or did you use that to strengthen you?
It's a really good question. You know, I initially, as I grew up, kind of felt like a victim mm-hmm. until my parents moved me out of that situation. And then I got back into what I would call a more normal environment where I wasn't under threat every single day. And then I used that kind of anger and angst to begin to train myself. Mm-hmm. I trained in the martial arts, I trained in strength training, and I began to come into that power. And then it cultivated itself into, okay, now I can be of service. And I think one of the greatest strengths it gave me was a deep sense of empathy for people who found themselves in positions where they couldn't stand up for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that I could not only come in and perhaps have an effect on that, but maybe plant a seed in their consciousness so that they could begin to empower themselves. The big mistake is to come in like the, you know, the knight on shining armor and the white horse and all that. And that's good for the ego. But at the end of the day, have I taught that person how to build their own resiliency, how to stand up for themselves and how to find that own inner strength? Because I had that empathy and compassion for people, I was able to help a number of young men and women find that character within themselves and develop it. And I think that was the real strength of it all.
That's amazing. I mean, such great work you're doing, brother. Now, you talk to a lot of people around the country, Leos, like I do, and with your training and various other programs you have. Now, what is the, I mean, there's no doubt. Look on the news, brother, you know that. Anybody who's listening, turn on the news and see what law enforcement is dealing with today. We were talking a little bit off the air about how it's just a different world, brother, than when you and I got into it. It's always been dangerous. It's always been stressful. But what are some of the reoccurring stressors or problems that what people are telling you? You talked to a lot of Leos. What are the reoccurring themes that keep coming up with our brave men and women out there?
Yeah, I'm glad you're asking the question. It's going to be a surprise to some, but not all who listen to your show, and certainly the ones that are in the industry directly. I've not seen the industry itself in a bigger state of distress. And what I mean by that is I'm getting a lot of officers who, because I don't represent any existing system or organization, I'm out, I'm doing my own thing, I've stepped aside from the existing structures, they confide in me a lot. You know, they take me aside and then they're looking for advice or they want to just relate something to me. And I got to tell you, the thing that is the most disturbing here is, yes, there is an unprecedented amount of negativity bias against law enforcement within the media. We know that that sells airtime. Controversy is the thing. And it's very skewed, right? That mm-hmm. that law enforcement is the problem, this, that, and the other thing. Now, I'm not saying the industry doesn't need to constantly be evolving. It always has been. Mm-hmm. When a bad apple is spotted, we figure it out. We take action on that, remove it, and move forward. It's never going to be perfect, but do we need to evolve? Sure. But this perspective, the media is just hammering.
Yeah.
The officers are now accepting. And when I say that, I mean that they believe the bulk of society is now against them. Well, let's think about the psychology of a person who enters service and is willing to run toward the sound of shots fired, toward danger, to risk their life for someone they don't even know. And now they don't feel the gratitude of that.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel the gratitude and support of it, you begin to question, what am I doing out here? Now, I want to set the record straight. I truly believe the vast majority of people are supportive of law enforcement. We're just not hearing it. They're the silent majority. And we have a very vocal minority of people who are getting that media attention.
Mm-hmm.
But the secondary thing, the one that is the most brutal, because there is so much pressure on departments and policing has now been politicized, the agencies don't want negative light on them. The cities and counties don't want negative light on them. And so they seem to be overreacting to any event that is even within the questionable realm. And so now officers are telling me, I don't trust my county, I don't trust my city, and I don't trust my administration. They don't have my six.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear that, I hear betrayal. And when I hear betrayal, I then have to kind of reverse engineer that and say back to the officers, well, if that's true and you're staying in the career, how do you navigate that? And here's the most disturbing part to me. Now, again, let's be clear, we're painting broad brushes here, mm-hmm. but I keep hearing it over and over at different parts of the country. I have to assume that this is happening on a large scale. The officers are saying they will answer a radio call that comes in. But if it's a hot call, they'll drive a little slower than usual with the lights and siren on in hopes that it all breaks up before they get there.
No.
That's number one. Number two is they're no longer doing proactive policing. They said the bulk of department action against officers is now occurring when you do self-initiated activity that then comes into question. Because someone didn't call you, you're now asserting yourself in a situation that before would have been no problem, but now it may come under scrutiny. And some officers have had that happen. And so then it's like, well, don't do anything. So they're telling me, yeah, we go in service. And if there's no radio calls, we just kind of park somewhere and hang out until a radio call comes in. So when we see proactive policing has been pushed to the side like that, I'm very concerned. I personally believe this is the beginning of the breakdown of our societal fabric, that when law enforcement doesn't feel that they can go out and do actual policing, that they have to hide rather than engage, we have a very serious problem.
Yeah. Well said. I mean, and you hit something, Roger, without getting into a political discussion. I think that's the difference in today's environment, if you ask me. You've done it a long time. I did it for a long time. And never before have I seen it become so politicized. It's always been a little, you know, politicized to a degree. But when we have people on both sides of the aisle, you know, about wanting the police gone, you know, defunding the police, I don't think I've ever seen it, you know, with politicians actively, you know, encouraging the abolishment of police departments, congressmen, you know, congresswomen, you know, and people and you know, senators saying this. It truly is amazing to you. But to your point, it trickles down to law enforcement. And they say, well, if the politicians, the people who make the laws are in charge, that not all of them, to preface, not all of them, but some of them, I mean, I agree with you. It's definitely a scary time we live in right now. And it makes you wonder, and I'll ask you, and that's a broad question. Where are we going with this, Roger? I mean, where are we going with this? Is this going to be the new norm? I mean, we're going to see officers leaving the profession in droves, and then, you know, response times go down. You know, this, I agree with you, lack of officer initiated activities because they don't want to get in trouble. I mean, it just seems like we're on a wave right now and we can't stop.
Yeah, it does feel like that. I believe this is a moment in time. I believe that we will have a correction and this pendulum will swing back the other way.
Mm-hmm.
When, however, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so as we're looking at this, you know, there's these calls for police reform. Well, we've always had police reform.
Exactly.
I get it, though. It's a hot button word now. And then we have this idea of defunding the police. It's an interesting concept to me. But what people forget is a little bit of history. So I came into law enforcement in the 1980s. And One of the things that happened was it started with President Reagan. And in order to balance his budget, he decided to raid specifically mental health services, dollars that were federally funded to mental health programs. And so some of those dollars went away. What's interesting is every president since then, regardless of which side of the fence they fell on, did the same thing to social services. Mm-hmm. So as we erode these social service programs, well, where else are we going to have these cracks in the system go? They went right to law enforcement. We have now entire mental health units in jails, right, where these folks would have been in mental health crisis facilities with totally professional staff sure. dedicated to that, right? And so law enforcement has been receiving all of these social problems that dollars were taken away from in order to help balance this. But for a moment, I just want to sidebar here and say, wait a minute. You're trying to give social service issues to a group of people who are wired psychologically to go into danger, to go into conflict and like it, right? That's our power. That's our superpower. Yeah. We're able to go into conflict and we like it. We run toward the sound of shots fired. Why would you try to take a person psychologically wired for that and have them go to a mental health call? My loved one is out of control and off their meds. And you think that sending someone in uniform with implements of destruction all over them, with lights and sirens and million candle power flashlights and a conflict psychology to go in and do harm reduction?
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind? So we have set ourselves up for failure. And what you're seeing now is policing is no longer policing. We're trying to solve all of society's problems. And therein lies the biggest mistake in my mind. You want to defund the police? Okay. Scale it back a little bit. Put it all into policing. And then take those extra dollars you just saved and reinvigorate social programs that go address homelessness, that go address drug usage, that go address domestic violence that's not violent. Let's get ahead of the curve so that we don't have to send officers into these situations. We've set the industry up to fail.
Yeah. And I thought as a young officer, I'd never would be administering Narcan to somebody, you know, on the street, you know, I mean, I just, it's amazing how it's evolved to your point. I mean, we're, you know, it's like the screen, we catch everything, you know, and nobody says, wait a minute. And I agree with you, Roger. Why are we going to these mental health calls? I agree. There's a component of danger. I get that. But we're not psychologists, just like we're not medics. Why are we shooting Narcan into somebody's nose? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but it's become that way and it's scary. So let me ask you this. If I'm a new officer, Roger, I want to get into law enforcement. I come to Roger and I say, hey, buddy, you've done it for a long time. What advice would you give me?
You know, it's interesting you asked this question.
It's a tough question, man.
It's a super tough question. I'm going to sidebar for just a second before I answer it directly. I was with a group of about 25 retired officers recently. And these were all people who loved their job, were excellent in their career. And I asked this question, you know, if you had a loved one who was going into the law enforcement services today, would you support that? And 100% of them said no. Now, that really gives you a flavor for where the mindset of the older officers, the ones that have recently retired, et cetera, are looking at the breakdown of what's happening, right? So then that begs the question, well, who should be coming into law enforcement? You have got to have a couple of really important things under your belt. One, you got to be truly service oriented. But more important than that, you got to double down on resiliency practices, to know why you're doing what you do. Because once your why gets questioned, you lose that passion. You're no longer getting up excited to go to work. You're like, okay, I got to grind this out till I get my retirement or whatever it is you're trying to shoot for. You've lost purpose and meaning, and then ultimately the legacy you're going to leave.
Wow.
People need to be clear as they come in, really, really clear. Okay, I'm coming in because this is my mission. And if we don't take care of our body, mind, and spirit along that journey, we're going to wear out. We're going to break down. we're not going to get up with that same excitement, that passion to go do the job, to let all the things that we can't control go, which is the hardest thing, and focus on the things we can. The advice I'd give to young officers is know your mission. Live it every single day with as much passion as you possibly can, and take really good care of yourself in all aspects, body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah, that's such great advice. I mean, I told you off the air, I go and instruct in academies once in a while, and I know it's a hot button for you. It's a hot button for me. I really wish that we would fit more into the post curriculum, the training curriculum in every academy across the country, into self-care. We're still not doing enough. I think we've come a long way since I was in, but it just amazes me. You said there's a 10-minute block for, this topic in some curriculums and some academies. I think I talk about it. I'm getting given like 15 minutes to talk about it. And I get it. It's packed curriculum. You got to have so many hours, but we really need to do a better job with getting the message out, or officers are going to suffer. Like I suffered, you suffered, along the way in a career because we didn't talk about this. It was taboo. You get into a critical incident, Roger, next minute you're back on the street. You do your report. All right, go out there. So it really is important. And I know we hear that all the time, but I really don't think that we can hear it enough as first responders. So
couldn't agree more. I used to get that blowback too in the academy. So I was adjunct faculty for my police academy. And I also was the lead fitness instructor there for 7 years. Now, I had to run a learning domain that was California Post required, and it was very specific. But being the guy that I am, whenever I could get away with something outside of that learning domain, I did it all the time, right? So, this is quite a while ago, and words like mindfulness were like, I don't know about that. That sounds pretty woo-woo, right? So I'd have these recruits, and about 50% at that time were coming out of the military because we had Desert Storm, and folks were now moving out of that into law enforcement careers. Some tough people. Mm-hmm. And on Fridays, specifically at the end of the week, I would have a 30-minute meditation for them. But the way I did it was I said, hey, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take you on a guided relaxation exercise to improve peak performance in both your fitness as well as your curriculum here. Firearms, driver's training, defensive tactics, all of it's going to improve with this guided relaxation exercise. And then I'd have them meditating for 30 minutes. Now, if I'd have said, hey, let's meditate, they would have gotten a rope, right? Well, here's the interesting part. All the scores in our academies, as we did this on a regular basis, started to improve. And the recruits started asking me if I ever missed a Friday, hey, we didn't get to meditate on Friday, right? We didn't get our relaxation exercise. Can we do that, coach? They were curious for it. They were hungry for it because they realized it was improving them across the board. I'd have a yoga instructor come in and I'd say, hey, we're going to do some advanced stretching today. We're going to open up that low back because that's the one that takes us out after all those years of wearing your duty belt. I'd bring a yoga instructor in and I'd tell her, break these guys because they think yoga's for chicks. And, that's a common thing I would get at the time. And then the instructor would come in and I'd see guys, these buff, yoked out guys just collapsing onto the ground and, whoa, coach, what was that? Oh, that's called yoga, And so we can weave these things in. And like I've explained to a lot of academy directors, it's like, look, you could weave in heart rate variability breathing exercises where you calm the heart before any perishable skills training, but you could also do it before you go take that report call from the rape victim.
Yeah.
To center and balance your mind. So you come in with empathy and focus. It's not hard to do these things, but they just haven't seen the bigger picture of how to do it.
Yeah. And I love it. Mindfulness. And it changed my life, Roger. I mean, I started meditating probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I occasionally miss a day, but usually I'm pretty spot on doing it daily in the morning, 10, 15 minutes. And really, well, let me back up. For me, my day starts where as soon as I wake up, I start my day in being grateful, gratitude. For me, and it took me a while to learn this, brother, but really, and I know this might sound hokey pokey to the listener, but really that has changed my life, because I don't care how crappy you think your life is, and I apologize if it is, you always have something to be grateful for. You're alive, first of all, right? You opened your eyes. So I start my day like that, and then I go into my meditation practice, brother. It changed my life. And if you would have asked me this, if you would have told me about this, Roger, handful of years ago, I'd have laughed at you and said, I ain't doing that crap. What am I? I'm not some hippie. I'm not going to be doing, it's not about that. Like you said, I've learned breathing exercises. This was a game changer for me. So, and I know you're a life coach and you do a lot of coaching, but I'm so glad you brought up resiliency and mindfulness, because again, if you're listening to this, this works. It's proven. There's science behind it. You need to start doing it if you're not doing it.
I'm appreciating the word game changer, because it is literally life altering.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And that's the thing that I didn't think, you know, until I started engaging in it and I started doing it every day. And I check my breathing, calming, you know, because I'm a type A, like you know, most cops are, type A personality, aggressive, alpha male. I'm not going to do that shit. That's crazy. That's hokey pokey. But it really has changed my life, changed my relationships, changed my demeanor, changed my outlook. You know, brother, I mean, law enforcement is a toxic environment. So we need to do what we can to kind of center ourselves and to balance things out. And it changed my life.
It is literally that. And, you know, when I put on a training course on mindfulness and resiliency, let's say I'm doing a couple of days worth 16 hours of training, there is no one way. And so what I expose mm-hmm. people to is a variety of different techniques, with the thought being something on this menu is going to call to you. And you get to experience that tangibly. And then you go, oh, I really like that one. I'll do that. Terrific. Because I look at resiliency as a bank account. Mm-hmm. Every time we watch the news and we see something negative on law enforcement or social media or whatever it is, we're pulling money out of that resiliency bank account. We get that hot call. We flood the body with cortisol, more money coming out of the resiliency bank account. Many of us in the law enforcement profession have reached overdraft protection, if not bankruptcy, right?
Exactly.
So daily practice is putting money back in. And many of us are good at training the body. We're getting better at how we fuel the body with our nutrition. We have more knowledge about that. But the one area I'm really seeing lacking is this mindfulness idea, calming the mind. And it's not woo-woo. You want to go back thousands of years? You want to go to a culture that you can totally relate to? Try the samurai. Mm-hmm. You want to use it in modern times? Get this. Most special forces personnel are now being required Absolutely. To train in transcendental meditation. Do you need a more of a sale than that? Right? I mean, come on. You're like a Navy SEAL, bro. Go out
every
and get your mindfulness
on. Every
SEAL
I have on the show, brother. Every SEAL I've had on the show, I've had SEALs that hunted down bin Laden. They say the same thing that you just said, you know, mindfulness, you know, some sort of meditation. And you're exactly right. There's a reason why a professional sports team engage in this too. So it does work. Now, if somebody, you know, how would you get somebody, you know, how do you convince somebody, Roger? Because you and I can sit here and talk about it. I know we're talking about the physiological differences and the psychological differences, but what are some simple steps to just get people to just start, you know, start, yeah. you know, just get up tomorrow and do what Roger is telling you to do and just listen to his podcast, which we're going to talk about, but just start meditating. What are some quick tips?
Love that question, because I get it a lot. What I tell people is the easiest way to get into a practice is to find a breathwork technique that allows you to quiet the mind, because the biggest problem, people who try to just sit and quiet the mind, forget about it. And like you said, mm-hmm. cops are type A, right? Not only is your mind active, it's like a monkey bouncing off the walls who just did a line of crack, got slapped, and was stung by a wasp, okay? Impossible. And so if we give the mind a task, it's one of the easiest ways to help it focus on something, because that's yeah. what we do. We're hypervigilant by nature, psychologically wired to be so. And we have a negativity bias for survival, right? So that's where our minds are always going, worst case scenario, etc. We have to push back a little on that. So one of the things I tell people is try this 3-minute meditation. And it's so simple. And people are all, 3 minutes, is that going to do anything? Well, as a matter of fact, when we yes. measure you with biofeedback, you'll be in a parasympathetic state. That's good. That's restorative. That's money back in the resiliency bank account for up to 6 hours from just doing a 3-minute practice. Yeah. And it's super simple. You simply inhale and exhale through the nose. And as you draw a breath in, you say a word that matches that. It could be something super simple like in, or peace, or joy, or happiness. Any word that helps you focus and feels good to you. Doesn't matter. You choose the semantic. And then on the exhale, we exhale 1 to 2 seconds longer than the inhale. This is a parasympathetic breath. It actually stimulates that parasympathetic nervous system, which is relaxing our physiology. It also puts us into heart rate coherence. That's huge for being overamped. Mm-hmm. So we inhale, say a word. We don't hold the breath. We immediately exhale a little longer and say another word. In, out, here, now, peace, joy. Don't care. Pick your word. And at the bottom of the exhale, start the next breath again. What you'll find over the course of 3 minutes is the breath will lengthen, both in inhale and exhale, as everything calms. The mind now has a word to focus on, so it's not wandering all over the place. Mm-hmm. And in 3 minutes, you're going to feel one of these four proofs that it's absolutely working. It could be any one of these or all of them, but these are four proofs that you are having a parasympathetic response, which is the good news, right? Your hands will be hot and heavy. You may have your lips begin to tingle, especially the lower lip. You might feel a tingling sensation in the spine or specific points in the spine, or you get a flushed tingling sensation throughout the body. People discount these things as not important, but I'm telling you that is profound. And when you feel one of those four proofs, you are in parasympathetic response. That's the juice. And it starts with just 3 minutes a day.
3 minutes a day. So do that, folks, starting tomorrow or start today when you get done listening to this. Close your eyes and do it. Close your eyes, right, Roger?
It is helpful to close the eyes simply
not
because
distracted.
We're reducing stimulus.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can also take something that is called a lazy gaze. And a lazy gaze is where we broaden our perspective, soften our focus, and we're not looking at any one thing. I've actually done this in meetings where I've been bored to tears. And I just soften my gaze. Looks like I'm paying attention. I have a nice
your eyes aren't closed. Spine. You don't want to get in trouble.
Exactly. And I'm just practicing the breathing technique, but I'm totally internal at that point. But I'm also not checked out. I'm hearing. And if something comes at me, I can respond. But I'm also in this wonderful place. So I do this all the time. I mean, I do it throughout the day. I have a meditation practice that I do an hour in the morning and an hour at night. Now, I don't want to freak people out. I didn't start there. I started with 3 minutes, but it got so good and felt so amazing that now I do a couple of hours a day because I'm in joy doing it. I love it, but believe me, I didn't start there. It's just a slow evolution.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does help you, folks. I know we've said that a million times, but it does, especially first responders, you know, do what Roger tells you to do. You know, it is so important. I mean, you're dealing with a lot of crap out there. You need a release. You can't just keep this stuff bottled in. You gotta do things to kind of, you know, de-stress. Let's talk about your show really quick, brother. Talk about the podcast. How did you start, or why did you start it? And it'll be linked up in the show notes for everybody can see. But it is a great show. I listened to one about masks a couple of days ago. Very interesting show. It's a great show. I know you had Jennifer Martinez on talking about her great product. So again, amazing show. Talk about it.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. You know, I see myself as a person who can kind of bridge gaps. And when I say that is I've taken the deep dive into the woo-woo land. I have meditated with
Me
monks
too.
And monastics. Totally. I have studied with a Vietnam combat veteran who happened to be a fifth generation Apache shaman.
Wow.
I've studied martial arts and Qigong mastery and things like this, subtle energy practices. So I go into the woo-woo and what I bring back is what works. Mm-hmm. And I show scientifically why it works, because our ever Western logical mind wants to know that.
Yeah.
When I look at the existing structure and I see employee assistance programs, peer support programs, and chaplaincy programs, all of which are amazing and needed, but I also see the suicide rate climbing, and I see despondency climbing, and I see people leaving and people not coming into the profession, I think to myself, okay, absolutely necessary programs, but something's missing. Mm-hmm. What's missing? Well, what if we kick open the door to the traditional and we explore the things that I've been through, that I've filtered, and I've put through my BS meter, and I can bring you back something that closes a gap. So I see myself as, hey, this woo-woo is actually scientifically valid. It has a tangible result in your body, might work better than anything you've tried yet. How about we explore that? Mm-hmm. And what I saw was this existing structure, and I saw limitation. I saw resistance at the admin level to bring anything like what I teach in. And I thought, well, hell, let me just start a podcast.
Yeah.
And through that, people can now come and listen to what they want to listen to and get different information. I'm not asking you to drink the Kool-Aid, but what I will say is, if you listen to something that I've covered and you have resistance to it, it's probably exactly what you should do, because your greatest growth is going to come from it. So that's it. I'm just providing information that you're not going to hear anywhere else in our community for consideration to help people take a step.
Yeah, and I love the show because it's all based on officer wellness, resiliency, mindset, what we're talking about. It's wonderful stuff, Roger. And like I said, brother, I mean, I wish there were more people like you out there, because I think officers, I mean, I think what people are, I mean, I hear it all the time. Well, there's so many things out there for officers. No, there's not. I think there needs to be more. And I love shows like yours because it's a free resource. It's free content. You're giving away your experience, your knowledge to the first responders. Now, the one thing I wanted to ask you really quick that I should have asked before, but I'm going to ask you now, how important, brother? I mean, because one of the things when I was in, you know, going through some rough times in law enforcement, we all do, is I really started looking at who was my tribe? Who was I hanging out with? Who was surrounding me? The one thing that I get shit for this a lot is I tell cops, I say, you have to get people outside of your law enforcement circle that you can associate with. Because like I said, I really do believe law enforcement, it's the nature of the job. It's a toxic environment. And eventually that's going to, I don't care how tough you think you are, it's going to affect you. But what really helped me with not only mindfulness and putting good stuff into my head as far as reading and, you know, positive things, it was getting friends outside of law enforcement. How important do you think that is?
Scale of 1 to 10, it's a 20.
I thought you might say that.
It's funny because one of the first people to really pioneer this concept was Dr. Kevin Gilmartin.
Oh, love Gilmartin. Yeah.
And his book, Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement, is relevant today, friends. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. And I recommend your partner and loved ones read it too, so they get a window into what you're going through. But here's the deal. Right now, what I'm observing is a pulling in. People are surrounding themselves only with other officers right now because that feels safe, because everything feels like it's coming down on them. But my advice is, you got to break that idea, get out into community in whatever way you like to be out in community. If you like to go hiking, I know it's a little harder in COVID times, I get it, but explore things that have nothing to do with your career. And by the way, you don't have to tell anyone what you do. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to say I'm a police officer. You can make something up if you want, but make some friends outside, because what you're going to find is the perspective that you've been given through the media is 100% skewed. And there's no greater resiliency practice than to realize, oh my goodness, most of the people out here really do support the work that I'm doing. Holy smoke. Yeah. And that is just absolutely enormous. In addition, you mentioned something that I really resonate with, that the environment in law enforcement can be at times, and maybe most of the time, a bit toxic. Mm-hmm. There's certainly cynicism, gallows humor, and all those things. And sure, that's part of culture. But if you surround yourself with it, who are you going home? You know, are you coming through the door, mom or dad or brother or sister or son or daughter? Are you able to put that hat on fully? Or are you dragging all that stuff from the day through the door Do you have people outside the community that you can reach out to and connect with and realize, you know what, the world's not as bad as it actually seems to be? And that's it. It's just a perspective change. Yeah. I live up in the Rocky Mountains. I'm at 8,500 feet. I'm in a very rural area. Mountain folk up here, they love law enforcement. Yeah. I have yet to meet someone who not only doesn't tolerate, but loves law enforcement, fully supportive. That's amazing to realize. And as I get into community, people are thanking me for the service I provided as an officer. And I'm getting all these positive affirmations. And then I start to realize, wow, I very rarely run into someone who's actually anti-police. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And when you shift that perspective, you just feel better about who you are. And let's be honest, no one says, I practice law enforcement for the city of. They say, I am a cop. I am a police. It's Absolutely. Your identity. If your identity is surrounded in toxicity, well, what's that say about you?
Yeah, you control all that stuff. I mean, you control. One of the things I heard recently, brother, is the longest relationship you have and you ever will have is with yourself. So you got to take care of yourself. You know, you got to eliminate that toxicity and that negativity from your life. Yeah, you're going to have bad days. But if it's like that all the time, then it's going to affect you. That's why you need people like Roger in your life. And you coach, you're a life coach too, right, Roger?
Yeah, I do. I love coaching first responders and want to be clear about the role of a coach. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to solve your problems. I'm here to empower you to your own solutions.
Exactly.
Right? So you're not getting advice from me. We're going to dig into what's got you stuck, unstick it, and find your way out of it. So let's be clear about that. And, you know, I wanted to say something. I ask my clients, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is a very difficult question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you love yourself? That's and often, question. If they get really quiet, they'll say, 4, 5. Whoa. The answer to that should be a 10.
10.
Every time. And so how do we get you to a 10? And the next follow-up question I have is, okay, if you're a 5, what do you think it would take to get you to a 6? Well, maybe if I did this or that. Okay, does that sound like a good place to start? So if you're looking for ways to improve yourself, if you can't honestly answer, and I'm not talking narcissistic love here, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm talking, do you really love who you are? Explore the question a little bit. Well, why am I not a 10? Or why am I not an 8 or even a 6? And what would it take to move the needle just a little more in that direction? Mm-hmm. If you take that into meditation, you might be profoundly surprised by some of the answers that come out that will then give you direction on which way you need to move. And maybe you need to work with someone in a professional way. Don't be afraid of therapy. I waited five years. And in that 5-year window, I developed a serious complex post-traumatic stress disorder situation where I had suicidal ideation. My solution was contemplating suicide. How did I try to do that? On duty. Being the hero, right? And that behavioral change in me, what did that gain me from my department? Pats on the backs and commendation. You're super cop. No one even noticed the behavioral shift that I was risking my life intentionally. Don't wait. Smash this damn stigma and go seek help. You can do it anonymously, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. So get out there. To me, I think we ought to be getting a mental health checkup, so to speak, 2 times a year minimum. Just like you go to the dentist.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see my EAP provider and I'm going to check in. I can do it anonymously and they're not going to judge me. They're going to hold me into a space of love and help me to continue to keep balanced in my mind. This is critical for our careers, in my opinion. It's something we're missing out on big time.
Yeah. And I do think sometimes, Roger, I don't know what you think, but I do think other people, other cops you spend most of your time with, they can see the change. They just don't say anything. You know, they're just not going to say anything. Well, we can't say anything to Roger, man. He, you know, it might piss him off. You know, I mean, we don't want to, you know, ruffle any feathers. So I do think some, I know with me, people saw the changes with me because they said they saw the changes with me. They saw me getting bitter, more hostile, angry, you name it. I was becoming, and nobody said anything to me because they didn't want to enter. You know what I mean? Even as good friends, they didn't want to say anything to me about it. So yeah, I do think cops that are super, super observant, they can notice this stuff, especially with good friends, you know, so, but they just don't, they don't say anything, which is not right, obviously. If we're good friends, you should be able to tell me anything, right? So
100%. And it's a slippery slope. That's a dangerous one, right? For most of us to wade into. But just imagine, you know, wouldn't you want that for yourself?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Roger Ruge. Buddy, if anybody, if people want to reach out to you, first of all, where can they find the show? And where can they find you?
Easiest way to get a hold of me is through the website, which is herotalk.org.
Yes. And listen to the podcast. Everything will be up in the show notes, what Roger and I talked to, especially I'll put some helplines in there if you're suffering right now. Roger, any final thoughts for the listener before we take off?
Law enforcement is now in a pivotal moment in time. We often are feeling overwhelmed in this time. We're feeling the department betrayal, societal betrayal, the pressure of the media and all of that. But this is also a time of opportunity and the potential for legacy creation. Imagine you leading yourself and others through this time and getting out on the other side and holding your head high. This is how we build powerful legacy. Double down on what you can control. Double down on your self-care and lead us through these tough times, because I promise you, when we come out the other side, we're going to be that much better for it.
Roger Ruge, thank you so much, brother, for your service to law enforcement, what you're doing right now, to the brave men and women who continue to serve. It's been an honor, sir. You're welcome back anytime. Matter of fact, I'd love to have you back on the show, brother.
Brother, I thank you for the opportunity to be here. A deep honor.
Take care, my friend.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.